choice, or she, I don't know, to resist that.
Yes.
To turn and do a 180 and start seeking healing.
Okay. So the way that it leaves it open-ended, you know, if the Kiwi went to rehab, that wouldn't, like, have as much of a punch, right? So instead it's like, what's it going to do?
Yeah.
It leaves it open. And so I agree. I think that's powerful. Other thoughts on the video?
Just reading some of the comments was pretty impactful. I didn't read, a slew.
Right, yeah.
Several.
Yeah, as well.
And
you
could tell that there were a lot of people who'd been through it and really related to it and felt like it really encapsulated their experience.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So if you didn't get a chance to, I think just a useful thing. More comments are good. More comments are welcome. But
begin class.
Could you identify all four? I don't know if you can identify all four. I don't know if it really makes the point of all four. You can maybe stretch it. But could you identify some of the stages of addiction that we talked about?
Oh, yeah. The high was less and less every time, and it lasted less.
Okay, yeah. So if you couldn't hear what Lori said, the high got less and less high, right? So in some ways, that was like one of the main like things of the video. The high is less and less high, and then, of course, what happens to the color of the video the further it gets? Darker and darker and darker, right? Yeah, so it gets more into that. So that one was pretty clear. And which of our four stages was that? There's like one word for each stage. What stage would that be?
The one I mentioned?
Yeah, so when you sinks. That's right. Sinking. The whole roller coaster of highs and lows sinking. Okay. Yeah, Heather.
I wondered if desensitization could be at the beginning, it's happy, he's walking, he seems to be happy, and then it's not a happy walk after that. So
yeah.
Losing the joy.
And so, and then I think with that, you see a little bit of the sensitization. How does it maybe see him kind of getting plugged in,
right.
and tunnel vision,
yes.
Running, you know, he starts walking, right? That kind of like awkward noise, step, you know, and then he's like going for it. So that's clearly the sensitization of that. Certainly joy is lost. Good. Any other comments?
Well, the first time it was high and then it came back down so nice and easy. But then the rest of the times, like, it's hurting him. So it's like that first time, there wasn't like a negative effect to it. So why not do it again the next time? And the more harmful he gets when it comes back down.
Yes.
So it wasn't necessarily a negative reason for him to not do it.
Yeah, that's right. And at that point, he's fairly hooked.
Right.
So he's certainly being led naturally by his flesh to go back to it. Now, of course, there's all kinds of Bible principles we'll talk about today with this, but so much of this is Galatians 5. The spirit and the flesh are at war with each other, and they keep you from doing what you want to do, right? You want to give into the flesh, and your conscience goes, you can't do that. So you want to do what's right, and then your flesh goes, ha ha ha, no, you're gonna, you know, take the easy way or whatever. So you see that of the flesh and the spirit warring each other, certainly the spiritual principles. So before we get to the homework, let's review our four stages. This is true for pornography, enslavement, but it's true for more than just that. This would be true of any kinds of addictive kinds of things. So sensitization to the drug. How did we summarize that?
Start associating place, people, time.
Okay, so all the associated things your brain starts associating with it. Good. And what else? Maybe even more kind of fundamentally, when you're sensitized to it.
Focused,
crave it, you want it, right, yeah. So hypersensitized to the source of those pleasure chemicals. Images are seared into the brain. We start to crave that thing. I want it. Tunnel vision, right? Lose focus on other things because that's the thing I want. And then, as Lauren mentioned, we start associating all the associated things. Where you were, time of day, the source, computer, phone, your mental state, the things you're trying to avoid, etc. Okay, desensitization. This is a more of a summary of all 4 points. But what are the major things with desensitization?
Things get shut out that are like the brain can't focus on those things.
Okay.
Focus so much on that.
Because you've gotten the fire hose of pleasure or the fire hose of dopamine, what does your brain do?
Takes away from other things.
Yeah, it dials it back, takes away, you could say turns down the volume of those things. And so that your brain doesn't overload, it starts dialing down on dopamine reception overall in the brain because it's had a lot. What did we compare that to? Gave a couple of kind of everyday examples.
Loud
noise. You go to a concert and you're leaving the concert of loud noise for hours, and afterwards you can't hear very well, right? That's what the brain has done. It's dialed everything down. And so other things you just don't find as much enjoyment for, which stink. That's awful, right? And so because we've overfed the brain, it literally makes everything less pleasurable. We start caring less about the other things that should give us that sense of reward. So homework, doing well at your job, relationships, friendships, all that, you have less motivation to do it because they're actually not satisfying your brain like they should, like they used to. Okay, desensitization, anything to add with that? And then shrinks is the idea of What's the word? Why does the word shrinks apply to stage three here?
Because part of the brain, the frontal.
The brain shrinks, the frontal part, the hypofrontalization, and then more kind of to the concept of it is that your brain is shrinking the good voices, right? Your brain has turned down the good voices. So as the enslavement increases, our brains have shrunk the parts of our brain we need to make good and righteous decisions. You know, this is the mob boss who, you know, someone says, but you shouldn't do that. And, you know, you shoot down the someone who objects, right? So the brain says, I don't want to listen to these parts of brain that say I shouldn't go back to this source of pleasure, the source of dopamine. And so it literally shrinks the parts of your brain that help you to say no. That should be a very healthy, good part of our brain. We hope that's true in our children, right? That they're learning to say no to their impulses. They're learning self-control and restraint. And this is actually hurting the parts of your brain that do that. And then number four, sinks. This is what we were hitting on a minute ago. The whole roller coaster sinks. Eventually, the pornography does less to make us feel good, and it serves more and more just to keep you from feeling bad. You think the drug is going to keep giving you a high, but after a while, all it's doing is keeping you from feeling so bad. And remember, we talked about the alarm, like your car seatbelt alarm. Your body starts making you feel terrible until you get your fix. It's sounding the alarm that you need to rush back and get your drug, right? Here's the quote. The dopamine deficit means they no longer experience pleasure from their drug of choice, but they must consume it just to feel normal. For many, watching pornography serves only to numb the pain they experience on a daily basis. As one commenter on our blog said, porn might feel like our little safe place, but that's a lie. It's a little self-isolating hell. So that idea of isolating, and all it is making things worse. And so there's the graphic of the high and lows, just so powerfully captured in that little cartoon video, the whole roller coaster sinks. Okay. Well, once we realize that's going to be the stages of enslavement and the stages of addiction, well, then as Christians, we say, man, God can help us through that. God's word can help us through that. What would be some helpful verses, helpful reminders from God's truth to counter each of those stages? In other words, you're talking to someone and they're in so clearly showing they're sensitized to this thing, they're kind of hooked on it and laser focused in on it, what could you say to them, right? So that was the homework, is what are some good Bible principles, good Bible verses that would address each of these stages? So you tell me, what did you think about with sensitization of helpful thoughts that are going to help out that?
I put all of Romans 6.
Okay, Romans 6. Keep going with that. What in Romans 6?
That's the freedom versus slavery.
Freedom versus slavery.
And slavery to God versus slavery to self or Satan.
Absolutely. And In Romans 6, you start by being dead to sin, right? You die to that sin. So that idea of a full commitment with that, good. So I think Romans 6 is a great place for that.
You can, from that same passage, you can remind someone, Paul says that we're now alive from the dead.
Okay.
So do you want to go back to be living death again?
Yeah.
You want to be alive.
Okay. So that idea of we can have life and see yourself as, you really can have life and not stay in the path of death. Yeah, Heather.
So I was thinking about in Proverbs 7, it talks about the young man who passes along the street near the corner of the house of the loose woman. And how if this is part of like, I'm in this place and it triggers this rush of emotion, about providing another place for that person to be instead of just saying, don't go over by our house, don't go to that street corner, don't go to that bar. Come be with me. Let me bring you to a safe place and let's establish better connections.
Yes.
That when you're here, you're safe, you're fed, you're loved, you have fun.
Yes, absolutely. Very good. So, and I think you brought a couple of things together there. Number one is, well, you shouldn't go that way. Don't go down that path. Look, are you even kind of wanting to go down that path because you know she's going to be there? But then an additional step to say, hey, let me help you. You come with me. Let me walk home with you. Why don't you come over to my place and we'll grab some coffee and we'll talk. And you know, so absolutely helping to change that routine, change that the groove in their mind that leads them back down into the pit. Let's say I'm going to walk hand in hand with you and we're going to start establishing some new grooves, right? Very good. Yeah, Lauren.
I put 1 John 2:15-17 that talks about don't love anything of the world. And at the end it says the world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of the Lord lives forever. Just to remind them that like this thing right now feels good right now, but it's not, it's going to pass. Like, it's
yes.
It's going to last. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that truth of where does this lead? How long is this even going to be, you know, enjoyable? You would say that to, say, a young lady who's dating a guy and he's bad news. You're like, okay, I know he seems fun right now. I know you guys are having a ton of fun together dating. Like, you don't want to be in a serious relationship with this guy. Like he's gonna harm you in your life and it's not going to be good. Look to the long term. And so that's a great verse for looking to the long term. Yes, Debbie.
Fix your eyes upon Jesus.
Okay, so my eyes want to be focused over here, and so instead have my eyes focused on Jesus. Good.
Job 31:1 is a good verse.
Okay, yeah, so Job 31, if this is specifically with pornography, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look on a woman. One of my favorite passages along these lines, and I don't remember if or when it shows up in this part of the quarter, but Proverbs 4 has kind of like the anatomy of wisdom. And Proverbs 4 says, keep your eyes looking forward. You can choose the path. You can choose what your eyes are going to focus on. And so keep going straight forward. Keep your eyes looking straight forward. And that is helpful. That is helpful. That comes to one of our big principles of growth that we'll get to later on. One of the primary principles of growth that the Bible gives us is fill the void. You don't just look at what you're trying to stop doing. You need to replace it with something better. You need to fill that. So we'll come to that. Okay, any other thoughts on this first one? Yeah, Lauren.
1 Corinthians 6, at the end, after it talks about what's good, it's not everything's beneficial, but it says flee from sexual immorality.
Flee,
and
yeah.
It reminds us that we were bought at a price.
Okay, so keep going.
No, I was just saying, like, you know, we have to flee and then remember, like, we're not our own. And we have to honor God with our bodies.
Okay. So, good reminders of the spiritual truths. And then flee. And then Paul will say the same thing to Timothy. Flee youthful lusts. So, that's kind of an active word, right? It is not just slowly walk away from. It is run away from it, right? So, you know, if you know that at the bus stop after school is where those guys are going to offer you those drugs, you don't go to the same place. In fact, you need to actively make a different way to get home, you know, whatever it is. So fleeing those things, Paul there uses a strong, active word to show the kind of effort we need to put into it. Flee those things. Yeah, Heather.
I love the story of Joseph to go with that, with Potiphar's wife.
And yes.
He just
yes.
goes, okay, stop. Yes. Yeah, come on. Don't yeah, do yeah, that. Yeah. Like, he just runs yes. out. It's such a powerful picture.
That's a great picture of that fleeing. Yeah, I wonder if that's what Paul had in mind.
Sorry, I was just looking that up, Heather. So we were right. Yeah. I was looking up Genesis 39 that, and we just talked to our boys this morning about some of the things that we're talking about in this class, just about how when there are temptations, like, you run.
Flee.
You do what Joseph yes. did. He had so much wisdom to not just stand there and negotiate and, well, let me give that some thought. I mean, he just booked it.
Yes.
He just ran. And that's what you do.
And then in the context of knowing how our brain works here, why is it that we need to flee, actively run away?
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
He evokes for me.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Not just running away.
Right.
There's something dangerous. You've got to get away.
Right. And why do I want distance between me and that thing? Because my brain really wants it, right? And if I'm not careful, I'm going to just go right back to it. A phrase that we'll use, I think today is going to be in the slides, automatic behaviors. That's when your body's just taken over, right? And before you realize it, I've gone to the fridge and you know, I'm about to grab the whatever. I didn't even realize I was doing that. And so we'll always be on the lookout for automatic behaviors of where your body's just taking over. Well, when it comes to these strong desires, these addiction type things, those automatic behaviors are super prevalent. I've grabbed my phone without even realizing it, right? I've started texting that person without even realizing it. Yeah, Elias.
Just based on this comment, one of the things that I see, kind of like was very good comment from Simon to some of the kids in his class. I was able to join that part whenever he was saying, hey, it always is going to happen when at some point you're exposed to that first look or whatever, like you look one way and there's an immodest woman, or it could be a commercial, it could be something. The main thing is work very hard. Don't let to the second look, to go on, I'm going to look again. So it's like, so that's very good, that's very powerful. It reminds me a lot of things. One of the things that I always try to do is my use glasses, so it's very helpful to take out your glasses. It's very helpful if there's something on TV or whatever, and then if you have a spouse or daughters, or in the case of Logan, we have a sister, so then the sisters can say, okay, now Logan, you can open your eyes or whatever or something. But it's like, so yeah, you want to make sure that, like, but that first look, you kind of, you don't have control to it. You have control to that second look. And it could be that type of scene, or it could be food or something. And okay, the first, oh, and then you're already stopped. You know you're not supposed to eat more. It's like, okay, go somewhere else, look somewhere else.
Yes, very good, very good. Here's what I had, and you guys had great things to say. If your brain is now sensitive to associating things with the drug or the drug, you'll need to stay away from all those things, right? So I might need to get rid of my phone. I might need to get internet out of the house. Why? Because my brain's just gonna go there. It's gonna take over very easily, right? I maybe need to stop hanging out with those friends. So Jesus puts it this way in Matthew 5:29. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better you lose one of your members than your whole body be thrown into hell. So what's the principle here? Why does Jesus say, if your hand causes you to sin, then get rid of the hand?
It's not worth it.
It's not worth it.
You have to take extreme measures.
Yeah, and sometimes it's me extreme measures, right? I might need to do some extreme thing to help myself be pure, because me right now with those friends, or me right now with my phone, I'm not getting out of it. I keep giving in. And so I'm going to have to cut off that source, because my brain is driving me, the flesh is driving me to want those things. And so wisdom would say, get those things out. Yeah, Lori.
I feel like so foundational is, are you going to count the cost? Because that's below everything. I mean, if you're not willing, you have to first be willing to count the cost and do whatever it takes.
That's right.
That's a decision.
And you may not realize that you're kind of avoiding that, but that's where someone talking to you can say, look, you've got to make some changes. Are you willing to change, fill in the blank, right? If you want to inherit the kingdom, you're going to need to be willing to do that. Mix up your routine, right? Change things up. Sleep in a different place. Do something enjoyable. Go to Bible camp for a week. That's one of my favorites. You know, it's like, mix up your routine, like do something different, right? It's just be very, very helpful. And there's some Bible precedent for that, right? The whole idea of going out into the wilderness and mixing things up and finding God and making time for God, that whole idea. Be mindful of the moods that drive you to the drug or the drug, right? Hopelessness, loneliness, sadness, anxiety. You know, those things are hard, and your flesh is going to be fighting against you to try to make you feel better by turning to these things. I need to get... Terry had a little acronym last quarter, hungry... angry, I forget what it is. I'll have to refresh myself on that. So I'm big on awareness. I think that just one fundamental things we need to grow in to be maturing and improving is awareness. I think X marker. Is being aware of our struggles, our challenges, our temptations. So awareness here, just know, realize you are going to have cravings, right? If you're trying to get over an addiction, you're going to have cravings. Like, don't let that catch you unaware, right? Be on the lookout for the way your brain is associating those things, right? You know, every day, you know, if you're falling into the same pit, be like, look, like, can't you see the way that you're falling into that pit? Don't be surprised when, this is specifically with pornography, but it would apply to other addictions and the flashbacks, the sensations of that, those previous drug hits. Don't be surprised when those images are still so vivid. They've been seared into your brain. That's unfortunate, but it's not unusual, right? That's just what your brain has done, is highlighted those things. Okay, desensitization, okay? So if someone is seeing themselves more withdrawn, other things in life are more blah, all they want is this thing, and their motivation has gone down for all those other things, how might you encourage someone from God's Word if you see desensitization going on in their life? Yeah, David.
This is where I used your Galatians 5 you mentioned earlier, because there's so many wonderful things in the fruit of the Spirit.
Okay.
And these can bring you back. I think if you say, look, you know, when you're serving God and you love Him, all these things bring you joy, bring you happiness. These things are lasting and real, whereas the others just...
Yep, miss. Joy, peace. There's not joy and peace and patience and love in the pit, right? So good. Kind of reminders of, look to the other side of this. On the other side of this is a place of joy and peace. Good. Other thoughts? Yeah, Heather.
Well, you know, Satan can't create anything. That's only God's ability. And God's created us to have those cravings. And I think helping people understand, it's not wrong that you want to feel this way. God's given a place for that. But the way you're going is going to rob you of the joy He's given you in that place.
Yeah, that's true.
And maybe just being aware of, like, it's not wrong to pray for those things. But it's also good to remember He's given us everything we need. And even if you think you need that sexual satisfaction from a spouse, if you never get that, He's still giving you everything you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Those deeper things. Okay, good. Other thoughts? Yeah.
So this is the stage where they would pull back and withdraw. So this is the right stage we need to reach out to them and try to bring them to us and to do things that involve God, bring them to church, bring them to a study, bring them to focus on Jesus, so that they're not, because they can't overcome it alone. So they need people, and they obviously need God. So.
Yeah. And I think with the desensitization, I don't think that this always looks super dramatic. This is not like, oh, they've dropped out of school. Oh, they won't leave their room. They don't have friends anymore. But it's more of just, oh, why would I work hard at my high school soccer team? You know, the motivation's gone for that, because that's just not, you know, why would I reach out to friends? It's easier just to play video games in my room, et cetera, et cetera. So it's in a lot of those little ways that they just become more and more less. And then that just becomes, of course, part of the downward spiral. is those things are less motivating. Well, and their friendships aren't as good. Well, that doesn't help anything. Yeah, Elias.
So we all know that we need to try to get people to be busy and focusing good things and positive things, but tying it to your lesson, normally, like for us, it's very easy to see and understand and obtain joy on all of those serving things. You were talking about how, because we're talking about somebody who is in the pit, who is just thinking, I need to serve myself. So they have that mentality. And then you want to talk them into and invite them towards, come and help me go clean the house of somebody. And they're not going to find joy right away on that, because they don't have that mentality. So we can, it's not just getting them busy. You need to spend time with them to help them with switch, make the transition, that mind transition. If not, you just take them from a negative thing to another negative thing in their mind because they haven't made that switch.
Yeah, yeah. And kind of what, going along with what you said, is patience with that. Like, they're not going to enjoy this right away. And that's okay because we're at least starting on a new path. You know, and so I just kind of understanding that that's going to be a painful new path. There's going to be some grumpiness, you know, along the way. Yeah. Okay, here's what I put. Your brain is adjusting to the fire hose of dopamine by lowering the pleasure of everything else. So refocus on those things that should give satisfaction again, right? Lean into those. If you could, you know, of course, you making that decision for yourself. Focus on those things that should give satisfaction and lean in. Don't let yourself withdraw from friends and good work, exercise, etc. Don't stop doing those things you need to grow. Well, I don't pray anymore because that's too hard. I don't read my Bible anymore because that's too hard. No, like lean into those things, right? Let those things be satisfying again. You're going to have to wait it out with patience while your brain recalibrates to normal. It's like fasting. It's not super fun. You know, when your doctor tells you, you know, you have to fast for whatever, you're like, well, that doesn't sound like fun. Like, it's not like that's it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. So there's going to be a recalibration, right? So use this as an opportunity to seek God more, enjoy good Bible study, you know, worship, prayer, time with Christians. Again, kind of say, I don't want to hang out with friends. I don't want to go to church. I don't want to whatever. Actually, I need to do those. I'm going to lean into that. And then, of course, when people in your life are encouraging you to do that, like take them up on that offer. So the awareness piece of this, again, the awareness piece, notice the ways you've withdrawn yourself. Notice the ways you've been more irritable. Notice the way you've let things go in other areas. Know that you're going to feel down for a while, right? Your brain has literally made life less pleasurable. And then lean into God's good blessings. Kind of something along the lines of what Heather was saying. Lean into God's good blessings. Enjoy good Bible study, worship, prayer. And helpful things like basketball or just making baskets, right? Good food, right? Time with good people, all those things. So, okay, what about when shrinks? You can just see how, and I think where this shows itself most obviously is when you see that someone's self-control is just out the window. It's like, it takes nothing for them to fall back in, right? Because the no part of their brain, they've turned that down. They didn't willingly do that, but they have. They've turned that down. So this is, you're like, it took so little for that temptation to grab you. It took so little for you to give into that again, right? Like, we talked about this in the afternoon, and then not that much later, like, you're back at it. Why is it that it's so easy for that temptation to grab you, like the slightest wind knocks you over? And the reason is, or at least there's one possibility, is because they've kind of seared the no part of their brain. So how might you encourage someone along those lines? Yeah, David.
Here I put, you go down to a fundamental thing like the greatest commandment, and then you like repeat that every day, and you like focus on that one thing.
Okay.
I'm going to try and accomplish this today.
So I think one of the big principles that helps people who are just so easily giving in to the temptation is you're going to have to do the prep work. You're going to have to be setting yourself up for success all day long, right? So, you know, when it's a minor temptation, you know, it's like, thankfully at this stage you know, of my life, when I walk into Walmart, I'm not like, okay, JD, don't shoplift. JD, don't shoplift. JD, don't shoplift. JD, don't shoplift. Right? That I'm not needing that level of reinforcement. But if I really had that as a problem, I need to be prepping myself all day long to set up for that. So that's this, is because the no volume has been turned down, I need to spend a lot of time beforehand in awareness and what is it that I tell myself, you know, what's the excuse I tend to make, what's the justification I tend to make, and really work on that before the moment of temptation. Jesus said this himself. How did Jesus put it in the Garden of Gethsemane? Watch and pray so that you don't enter into temptation, right? You're going to have to put the work in ahead of time so that when it comes, you're ready for it. That idea. The drug addiction literally shrinks your brain to turn down the voices that would keep you away from it. So you're going to have to work hard to turn those voices up again. Lots of prayer, time in God's Word, talking with encouraging people before the moment of temptation. Here it is. This Matthew 26:41, watch and pray so you don't enter into temptation. The spirit's willing, but the flesh is weak. And so if you've turned down the no voice, then you need to work to turn up the no voice and just put in that work ahead of time. So you can. You can definitely do that. But it just takes being honest with yourself, all those things. Yes, Stephen.
What's screaming out in the back of my mind is that I think we're not stating it, but the assumption is there is part of the fundamental is you have to get on the same page with this person that they want out, because you can encourage and you can pray and you can do all this, but if they're just saying, I'm good sitting in the pit, Ramsey's word is when he talks about, you know, I'm in a poopy diaper, it stinks, but it's warm and it's mine. If you don't want out of it, you're not going to change yourself and get out of it. You know what I mean? So
yes, absolutely.
I think that's part of it, is that maybe that's a good part of the fundamental is, do you want out? Do you like this? Do you want a change? Because sometimes we willingly turn off because we have told ourselves, with whatever reason, fundamental, that can be a whole other stem of the creek of do you think you can get out? Do you want to get out? Is it worth getting out? So that to me is sometimes when you get to this point, because I have met, and some of my good friends never wanted out. That the reason for going into that drug addiction or pornography addiction, the traumas that they've dealt with and all that are so great in their mind, they can't get over those hurdles to want to get out of the drug is making that silent. And that's obviously, as we've talked before, is part of the reason for that. And maybe that's part of the fundamental is helping them work through that process to say, do you want out? Because we understand from Scripture that not everybody wants to follow Jesus, and not everybody will follow Jesus. So when I think of fundamentals, that's kind of where I go, because of some life experiences, good friends that I've lost because they have walked away because they don't want to change, because the reason for their addiction, the reason for their leaving of their marriage, the reason for their hit is bigger than they want to tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is huge. You're absolutely right. And you can't force them to change. You can't force them to want to change. Sometimes we pray for the prodigal son kind of thing. Lord, please help them to hit rock bottom now so that we can get help on the other side, as opposed to the one last drug trip that they die in, or that things turn irreparably bad, right? And so we can't make them want to change. We can do, we do the pieces of that we can, but that's so real. And that's where it becomes very difficult is, hey, there's resources there. It doesn't seem like they want it. Do you want it? You sound like you want it, but then you sound like you don't. You know, that kind of thing.
And there's an element of Jesus saying, don't cast your pearls upon swine. We don't want to call everybody swine, but we also need to understand, is this our life effort for this one person, which is very noble, or are we wasting our time?
Absolutely.
If they don't want it.
Yep. So one of Jesus' statements in the Gospel of John that I think really hits home in John 5, do you want to be made well? Well, if you're a layman, you go, well, yeah, of course I do, right? But then we ask ourselves that question. I think the Gospel of John sets up some of those things. You know, the first words out of Jesus' mouth in John are, what are you looking for? You know, that's a great question for us. And then chapter 5, do you want to be made well? That's a good question for us. Sometimes people will put up kind of lip service, I want to get better. But that's part of the dysfunction is they want to keep the sin, but then they also want to slightly fight it to salve their conscience, you know. So, yep, those are absolutely great thoughts. There was a hand. Oh, yeah, there, and then.
This is just yelling out in my brain, too, that for those of us who haven't walked through addiction, the little bit that I've learned the last couple years about it, and I can't speak for someone who's walked through it, it's such a beast, and it's something, especially as Christians, when it comes to the Bible, just being very careful not to start telling people, well, if you do this, you know, just focus on the greatest command. And that's, for a person who's truly caught up in addiction, they need help. They need professional help. And they're not going to be able to read the greatest command and then just start changing. It takes a long time. And what you can do is have patience and love for these people that are hurting. So those are the little things that I've learned over the last couple years, is how we, not necessarily, I know your question is not pointed toward that as much, but we can be Isaiah 42:3 talking about not putting out a smoldering wick. So much love and compassion and hugs, and do what Heather's saying, grab them, take them along, spending time with them, trying to understand as much as we can to be compassionate and to love. That's what Jesus did. So just truly understanding, it's bigger than we can understand if we haven't walked through it.
Yeah.
Have compassion for that.
So, and another part of the package is the growth doesn't come from us. God gives the growth, you know, and so we try to help people, and they're trying to do their part. God gives the growth. And there does need to be this, it's a mysterious balance of, we speak the truth in loving, encouraging, humble, right kind of ways, knowing that not a lot might sink in right now, and that's okay. You know, so we don't fire hose, fire blast with it, but it's like, if we say, well, they're not absorbing a lot right now, so we don't need to say anything. Well, no, there's truths that will have their purpose. And so it's kind of this package of, as we help bear their burdens and walk with them, and we keep speaking the truth, but realizing that they're not processing things very well right now, you know. And so there's a time to be like Job's friends and not say anything. There's a time to start saying more and more. It just kind of depends on the nature of where that person's at, and you know, that the whole package. So yeah, absolutely. And again, the humility of I'm willing to help you bear this burden. I'm not going to give up on you. You may give up, but I'm not going to give up on you, and do what I can to help you there. Yeah, Elias.
So we'll know when we're all talking about evangelism, we just need to do it general, continuously, and you never know the time for somebody's heart to change. You never know. And it is like, it could be a simple thing. You're inviting somebody to a singing, you're inviting someone coming to church. You just continue inviting them until they block you or whatever. And sometimes they may say, no, you know what? And they have told me, or even my siblings, they have told me. And then later, 10 years later, they have an open heart, and they will. I will continue talking to them about God. Like, I love them. Why wouldn't I? So you continue, but that's not going to be where you're going to spend your time, is when somebody opens their heart and they want to really start studying more the Bible. Like, for example, my dad now at 80, is when he started, that's when I'm spending more time studying with him. He got baptized at 60, but that doesn't mean that during those 20 years, I would not be stopping, inviting him and telling him. It's like, you need to continuously, and you don't know how long it's going to take. So I have been in both ends, and people didn't give up on me. And when people don't give up on you, that's where you see it, and it's very helpful, because you're able to come back of sin. But when you see, especially when you're on the other end, when you're in addiction, when you're in sin, when you see purity and you see light, that is what they need to see in us. Is that harder time? Is when you need to make sure that you're holy and you're pure and you're not a hypocrite in front of somebody who is acting on the pit.
Good. Heather, did you?
Yeah, I was thinking of a couple verses. One in Philippians 2:13, it's God who works in you both to will and to do. That God can increase a will. He mm-hmm. can take a little bit of will and he can make a whole bunch out
yep.
of it. And then also in Romans 12:2, that we can renew, he can renew our minds. That's possible. And to Abby's point, it is sometimes such a hard calling to hold hope when somebody is in such a dark place and to continue to know he can renew that mind.
Yep.
And he can work in them to will and to do his good pleasure. That's possible.
Yeah, so hope there.
Yeah.
Yeah, holding out hope, yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Dan.
I think a couple of things we need to be careful about is no one got up one day and said, I'm gonna become an addict. And not, I think sometimes we're associating addict with sin. And that's not necessarily the case. My understanding is that so much of it has to do with pain and trauma that the person got into this not by their own will, but to help numb pain. And it's not that they're necessarily not godly or that they're sinning. There's a lot of things we're addicted to that's not sin. And I think we need to be careful with even, you know, something that we would see as sin, alcohol or drugs. We don't know what that person's walked through. And I agree with Abby. I think there needs to be professional counseling. And because someone says, no, they're not willing, that's, and a lot of times I think that's out of fear. Because they don't really understand, unless they've been through some counseling, that what they're doing is keeping the pain down. And if it gets too close to what they're feeling, they feel like, I can't survive this. So I don't have a choice. I need to keep doing what I'm doing to keep it numb. And some of the isolation is a lot of shame.
Mm-hmm.
That if we don't know in here, in this room, there may be some that you have a secret addiction, that they're afraid. If somebody really knew what I was going through, they would never accept me. And it's not necessarily about not being, wanting to be spiritual or serving God. It's about so much pain that they don't know what else to do. And I think being a friend to them, showing compassion, they're not gonna necessarily say right up front that yes, I want therapy, but to help them to get there. So I think we need to remember that addiction and sin aren't necessarily interchangeable.
And I think that there is this, again, kind of this balance we need to have with people in their shame, in the things that they're going through that are, and shame is one of the things we'll talk about, I think next class is when we'll get to it. Is we need to, on our part, have a disposition, have a spirit where people can come to us. That we're not going to be shaming in at all an inappropriate way or a way that is just making that worse. So we need to be approachable, is maybe a good word for that. At the same time, even in our shame, God does tell us things like, talk to your elders. You know, find people to talk to. And so we have to kind of have this balance of, I want to be as approachable as possible and be able to have any conversation in any way that will be uplifting and upbuilding. But then also people are going to have to take their steps in their shame, or else then you can't help them, you know. So it is this meeting of both, and that's going to be the path where real growth is going to happen. I've used the book Soul of Shame up here a few times. I think he has some good things. And one of his basic theses in that book is, you know, the way through shame, the way out of shame is going to be approaching it, right? Hitting it. And I don't mean in a way that makes the shame worse, like some people's way they try to get out of shame is just more and more self-shaming. That just makes the whole thing worse. But no, to find healing with people who can encourage you, we're going to have to open up some to make that happen. Okay, yeah.
So something Heather said, what she said, kind of fits with this. I think just like we tend to have like levels of sin, like we think of some sins as just, you know, so heinous and so much worse than others, maybe more than our sin. Anyway, I think it's so important that we recognize addictive behaviors in ourselves, even if they're acceptable addictions, you know, like sweets or coffee or shopping. And we've mentioned those things, but we do need to not be hypocrites.
Yeah.
And people see, but we laugh about those. You know, we tend to laugh about those things. And but we can be sort of brought under the control of those things, not to the level of drug addiction or pornography, but still could be.
Absolutely.
Things that we give into too often.
Yeah, good. So going along with Matthew 26 here, what are some practical ideas for preparing ourselves before the moment of temptation, right? I know that after work, the guys
5-minute warning
are going to ask me to the bar. Okay, I have all day. I know that's coming at 5 o'clock, right? So what are some practical ideas to prepare myself beforehand? Well, you know, things like read scripture, meditate on that. Think ahead of what your brain will tell you. Well, the last time the excuse I said was this. Okay, so when my brain gives me that excuse, I go, wait a second, flesh, you're trying to get me to do that again. In other words, think ahead about the excuses you'll tend to make, the justifications that you tend to make. Be aware of those. Write those down. Like, this is what I tell myself right before I say yes when I shouldn't say yes, right? And then really fully commit yourself. So that's a Romans 6 idea. Work on the heart of Christ that says, not my will, but your will be done. And so I'm not going to sin again. I'm not going to give in to that sin. That's a sin. I need to be dead to that sin. Okay, let's try to finish. The drug addiction literally shrinks your brain. So you need to accept help from people who can say no for you. So that can become a part of a drug addiction, helping someone through, or pornography. Depend on people who can be strong and helpful to you when you're in a place of weakness, right? I'm not saying no very well right now. So here's my phone, here's my credit card, whatever it is. You're gonna have to say no for me. And there may be things you need to hand control over to others. Be mindful of automatic behavior. So we mentioned this a minute ago, but this is just so huge. Automatic behaviors are things we do, and I'm not even thinking, right? It's like, oh, those are nice cookies my wife made. And then like 2 cookies later, it's like, where did those cookies go? I ate them. I didn't even realize I ate them, right? And so the flesh just takes over. So I've used the example before. Your whole life, you're used to drinking beer when you eat pizza. So you order the pizza, and without even realizing it, you're in the fridge looking for that beer. And like, man, that was an automatic behavior. My flesh was really was on the path like it has been before. So notice those automatic behavior. Oh yeah, I walk by the cookies, and before I know it, all there's left are crumbs, right? I put my phone away, and I blink, and it's back up. How did my phone get back in my hand? You know, those kind of automatic behaviors, right? So look for automatic behaviors when I'm tempted to go right back to sin, and I'm doing what the flesh wants me to do. So to summarize this, because I've shrunk my brain, I'm gonna have to work hard to turn up those voices and work hard before the moment of temptation. That's Jesus in Matthew 26. Accept help from people who can say no for you and be mindful of automatic behaviors. Here's the awareness piece. Notice how small the voice of your conscience has become in terms of searing your conscience. Of course, that's what 1 Timothy 4 is, people who sear their conscience. Notice how easily you relapse at the slightest temptation. That's a sign of your no brain is not very loud right now. It just takes the slightest thing. Notice when you're tempted to ignore that small voice. It may be very small, but notice you yourself ignoring that. Notice when you're making excuses, right? And when your willpower is very small. Okay, then sinks, I'll try to get through this. Your brain is adjusted to where it needs the drug, not to feel good, but to just feel normal. So you're going to feel terrible while your brain readjusts, right? So you'll need patience, you'll need encouragement. You'll need people to help you, right? Look beyond the current misery. When you feel that stress response from not having the drug, interpret that correctly. The world isn't falling apart. I'm just stressed out because I want that drug hit again, that idea. It's not a real alarm. You don't actually need the drug. Nothing's actually wrong. Notice that for what it is, your body's trying to bully you back into going to the drug. So know it's going to be hard. You're retraining your brain to engage normally with life again. Notice that stress response. Wow, I'm really stressed out. Wow, all I can think about is going back to that drug or that drug, right? And notice how enslaving that drug is. Notice how it doesn't even make you feel great anymore, but it's just so hard to put up a fight, you know, that whole idea. So here's the homework to wrap up this kind of piece of the unit, not the full unit of how we struggle, but this addiction piece. There is the sermon I did 3 years ago that's really an addiction sermon. Yes, the word addiction shows up, but it's not like I said, and here's an addiction sermon, but that's basically what the lesson was. It's called The Sword of the Spirit, Overcoming the Flesh, delivered 7/10/22. The audio and the slides are there. I put the spiritual health, mental health tag on it. So if you do the sorting, if you sort by spiritual health, mental health to pull up this class, it's actually the first one on that. So that's easy to find it that way. And so that's the homework. The homework is just to listen to that sermon. And then we're going to start talking, God willing, on Wednesday about emotions, the four basic emotions. So that's a fun unit.
Only men will speak right on that one.
That's right. That's right. The men who are experts on articulating our emotions. This is the material on addiction, just those slides printed out. In case you want to grab that, this is here in case you want it on your way. Thank you all.